Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Film Nerds Podcast.
Are you going to do the whole episode with the Rico in your mouth?
Yes, dude. I'm just getting over a cold. So, yes, I have a cough drop. This is a Rico episode. Oh, shit. It's cough drop Comedy Film Nerds. Cough drop. Drop it down. Drop it down a notch. I'm just so trying to hype this up for no reason.
Episode 151.
Oh, halfway to 302, bitches.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
It is so exciting.
We got a lot to talk about today, too.
Not really.
No, really. There's a few things.
I have a slow day.
Yeah.
We always have a lot to talk about.
We're really excited, too, because this is our yet another episode sponsored by Downcast.
God love them. Man. God loves Downcast.
They're amazing. Not only is their app amazing, they're amazing that they keep sponsoring us.
That their check's clear.
Yes.
That's the most amazing part about them.
Yeah, yeah. There's amazing on many different
levels.
Downcast right now. So if you haven't already bought the Downcast app, you really should, because they need to keep advertising with us. So
yes.
We need to show some progress. You need to buy the Downcast app. Yeah. And it is an amazing app. Like we said before, it's the app that Apple should have made but didn't. So... Mm-hmm. The creator, Seth MacFarlane, not that Seth MacFarlane.
he must get that a thousand times a day. Oh, do the voice.
Yeah. I'm a programmer.
Oh, I saw you at the Oscars. That was great. Do more of that.
Why would I be doing an app if I just hosted the Oscars?
Yeah. maybe he's a Renaissance man.
Yeah, maybe. That's true. That could be. He could be doing both. And maybe this is his passion, apps, app programming.
It could very well be.
So the cool thing about this is you can have smart playlists. So when you put a bunch of podcasts into the app, when you pick which ones you want, you can pick like which ones are your favorites. So when new episodes of those come up, they immediately go to the top of your playlist. And you can mix paid podcasts with free podcasts. Like Apple also won't let you do that. Like you could put Never Not Funny with us.
That's because Apple's racist.
Yeah, that's just clearly. They're against... people making money that aren't them.
Yeah,
that's what they're against. Yeah, that's the white paper. Yeah,
Apple.
Yeah,
everything's white with Apple.
Yeah,
I'm trying to be quiet over
here. No. Our guest really wanted to throw a couple things in. You know, you could still jump in even if we haven't introduced you yet.
People kind of know who you are just because we would say
because my name is on the
title of the episode.
Yes.
When we first started doing this, be like, oh, don't say his name yet. It's like, well, they see the episode. It says episode 151.
Yeah, you kind of know.
You kind of know
who's being quiet right now.
Whoever's not our dumb voices,
right.
that's probably the name of the guest.
Yeah. Very good, strong possibility.
Unless we just flip it up. You know, we just like, our guest this week, Baron Vaughn, and then Margaret Cho starts talking.
Right.
That would be weird.
Not that weird, actually.
Yeah.
We get mixed up all the time.
So, do that bit about your Korean mom again.
Yeah. So Downcast, the other thing is it's a universal app. You can buy it once. You can run it on iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad, iPad Mini. And it's a priority. You could always have your favorite podcast go first. And the thing, it has multiple options for skipping forward and backward within episodes, including from headphone or Bluetooth remote controls. And you can search and browse top podcasts to list and discover and subscribe to new podcast subscriptions after you've already subscribed to us. That's one of the features. Ours has to be first.
Yeah, you can't have
priority.
It.
Otherwise, the app will not add any other podcasts.
Your computer will blow up.
Yeah.
That's if you don't have us in your...
It's a sleeper app, is what we're saying. It's a CFN sleeper
app. Yes, yes, yes. We're cyber terrorists is what we're doing.
And the other thing is it's also, I know this is a weird thing to say, but it's also very stable. You know, a lot of apps sometimes they'll crash, they don't work. And one of the feedbacks that this app has gotten is that it doesn't crash as much as the Apple apps. Uh-huh. It's much more stable. It's like, but it's such a dumb thing. It's like cell phone carriers going, look, we have less drop calls than the other people. Why don't you work on a system that doesn't drop any calls?
Right.
Because guess what? I'm buying a cell phone. I need to call.
And this is it's in addition to being, it's also emotionally stable.
Yeah, it is.
It's not going to flip out on you. It's not going to suddenly start lying to you or being weird.
You're not going to come home and the app's not going to start spouting bullshit.
Yeah, going, what's your problem? What, I just walked through the door.
So that's the other good thing about this app. It is very emotionally stable. And it has iCloud syncing.
Nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to go download it.
Yes! You should. You absolutely should.
Converted Baron Vaughn in less than 30 seconds.
Let's officially introduce our guest. That's the wonderful voice of our guest, Baron Vaughn.
Hey. All right. I can leave now.
Yeah.
That was it.
Thank you. Good night.
I just killed it.
I just killed it.
I nailed this podcast.
Spike the microphone and walk out.
It would be really loud for your listeners in their ears, like, oh, I think he just spiked the mic. I think he just Chris Rocked this podcast. Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Baron, great to have you here. Why don't now you have your own podcast, if that is correct.
Indeed, I doozles. It is called Deep Shit.
You got to asterisk it out for the logo?
I think it's for... It's pound, pound, exclamation point.
Oh.
Yeah, I had something else, and then iTunes said, it still looks like shit. Oh. Like, it was like pound something. I don't remember. I made some symbols up, and they're like, no, it still resembles it too much. Mm-hmm. It can't look like the word shit. I'm like, okay, well.
So you actually got feedback from iTunes where you could, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're more
That's
afraid.
It's funny, the email just said, it still looks like shit.
Yeah. what are you talking about? Your haircut.
Your hair.
Are you watching me?
The logo. It looks like shit. Yeah, everything you're doing. So what? Yeah, explain to our fans what your show is.
Well, the premise of it, and it's not is, it's eel. The premise, eel, that I have a guest, and they pick a quote-unquote big life theme. Right, something they've been thinking about coming back to, struggling with lately, and we just get into it. Mm. I like to also have a guest back like at least three times, so you can hear kind of like the genesis of the relationship.
Oh, so do you go back to like, hey, when you were on the first time, you were talking about this issue. Where's that at now? Do you kind of revisit?
Yeah. I just did one with my friend, and it was justice. Was the issue, mm-hmm. And of course, we can only scratch the surface of that. So we're gonna do another podcast to scratch the surface just a little bit more, but we'll come back to themes that we touched on that first one.
So you don't just have comics on that, you have all different types of guests.
It has predominantly been comics. Mm-hmm. I had an episode that was a rapper, mm-hmm. Who I'll have back.
What was his life issue that he wanted to talk about?
Oh, we talked about rap.
Rap, okay.
We talked about rap music because he's also like an art rap kind of a guy, backpack rap. It's like, you know, like, it's not like this
prog
radio
rap?
Hip-hop sort of thing.
Is it like prog rap?
It's basically the same thing as prog rap. Yeah. It's like conscientious, but it's like, you know, like, sometimes
oh,
like
he's
that.
So is his thing is sort of the backlash against the sort of mainstream rap that has nothing to say?
Exactly, kind of like, right. Exactly. But also, he's not like specifically political as much as he is just being honest about his own personal life and his own personal experiences,
right.
Instead of playing up this kind of machismo, kind of like, look at these bills,
right.
bills. My bill. Instead of that, it's like, my bills are piling up, bills. I only did one show 3 months ago, something like that. You know, he's just talking about where he's at. You know what I mean? I also have my friend Mandy on, who is a girl I knew from college, but has been ravaged by Lyme disease for 2 years.
Wow. Oh, man.
So we talked about kind of that and all that stuff.
That happened to...
It was a comic that happened to, wasn't it?
Tom Sharp.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I heard about that, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where's she at now with her...
Wow, excuse me.
It's all right.
Where's she at now with her Lyme disease?
Well, it went misdiagnosed for a year.
Jesus.
So it's like... what she got diagnosed with, one of the things she got diagnosed with was scleroderma, which literally means hard skin. Like basically it's like almost like a rash where your skin is like scaly hard,
right.
And you can't move your hands. She couldn't move her hands. She was a web designer by trade.
Oh, man.
So it's like she couldn't like program and do stuff anymore. I saw her recently and it was like she can't really walk. I was like carrying her to the bathroom and like helping her go to the bathroom and stuff like that. So she has like, she lives in an assisted living facility. She's 33.
Oh, that stinks.
Wow.
Yeah, but she's hopefully in the process of getting better, you know, with medicines and treatments, mm-hmm. And just changing her diet and stuff like that. She got this thing called the Rife machine, which is crazy. You guys know what the Rife mm-hmm. machine is?
No.
Some of your listeners are like, Rife, yeah. Okay. She said that Rife is basically like the Tesla of medicine in a sort of a way. Like he was a little bit out there and people discounted him because he wasn't all about profits. Okay.
Oh.
So he created this thing.
What an asshole.
I know.
All about profits.
His name was Royal Raymond Rife.
That's not a real name.
I know. RRR.
You're a supervillain.
RRR. He's just played by Vin Diesel.
Yeah. He built this machine in a hollowed out volcano.
Yeah, exactly. Samuel Jackson with blonde hair.
Right.
Samuel Jackson's like, I like what Wesley Snipes did in Demolition Man. can we do that again? Was that Triple X? Yeah, that was
sure. Okay, right, absolutely.
I'm making all these references to a movie. I'm like, wait a minute, did that actually happen in there? Am I thinking of Pitch Black? So he basically said, you know, bacteria and viruses, like anything else, vibrate at a frequency. If I can vibrate something at their frequency, it will destroy those bacteria. It will kill them. And apparently he cured like cancer and Lyme disease and all sorts of shit with his machine, which is illegal in the United States.
Oh, God.
You know who has a lot?
I was just about to say, lock him up.
They did. They basically did.
It's illegal in the United States.
It's illegal. Yeah, it's illegal that like it's like, if you get one, you can't just get one. You have to kind of like assemble it from different parts and stuff. It's like a whole situation.
It's illegal in the United States to cure these diseases.
Well, see, because people are saying it's not, it's the research is inconclusive and stuff. But there's literally videos of bacteria exploding, like in a Petri dish, things that are supposedly uncurable, and him just going, and it goes.
No, it's not unproven, and is it safe or not? The medical community, the trillion dollar industry just went, nope, this will put us out of business.
You know, we have to have Baron now on an episode just talking about this with Dean Haglund.
Yeah, for sure. Dean Haglund's our conspiracy. Yeah.
Oh, Shazzle Dazzle.
Yeah, and you know what? He actually told me about this machine like years ago, because it's been around for a while.
It's been around. I mean, the guy invented this stuff like in the 20s, 30s. That's when he was around. So
it was all about finding the frequency of like cancer cells and stuff and destroying them.
Exactly.
Like, with sound.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And they use them a lot in Europe, especially Germany. Mm-hmm. You know, wow. Germans.
Wow.
Always good for something.
Like genocide and sadomasochism.
Yeah. Genocide and auto engineering.
Oh, good cars, baby.
They're good at cars and killing.
That should be the slogan on their flag. Cars and killing.
Welcome to Germany. Cars and killing. Yeah. Was ist das? Automobiliens.
Ausgezeichnet nicht. Which is like outstanding.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I lived in Munich for a year when I was a kid.
Oh, didn't know that.
But bam, but you didn't know that.
That's why every once in a while when you come into the garage, I just go, papers, please.
Your papers. Your papers are not in order.
Oh, that's frightening.
Yeah, Chris is very good at interrogation.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say real quick, I want to thank everybody that came out to the Comedy Attic in Bloomington.
That's such a great room.
That club is so great.
Love that club.
So great.
We'll be there in June, right?
We'll be there in June doing the Limestone Festival. Are you doing that?
No.
Well, it's going to be great.
Is Jared booking it?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to talk to him about it now.
Yeah. you performed. That club, the fact that he created that environment in Bloomington, like, is amazing. That there's smart fans, they're comedy fans. Like, he really created that.
He's cultivated an audience of like people who really like interesting comedy.
And it's funny because, you know, you'll get people that come out, you know, you can tell they're from some smaller neighboring town or something, and they've got the hunting caps or whatever.
Right.
And they come out, but there's a group of them at one of the shows on Saturday night. And in my head, I was like, oh boy, here we go. After they were a great audience, they come up. Oh, we come here all the time. Like,
were they wearing orange vests too, or just hunting caps?
Probably had some in the car, man. I mean, they looked like, you know, small town Midwestern.
We enjoyed the show. We're gonna go night hunting now.
Yeah.
We're gonna take this energy and take it out with some elk.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was, and that to me was like a testament to what he's created there. You know, and rarely do you get someone that's like a drunk idiot, but that can happen anywhere. The best person in the world can get drunk and become a moron.
Yeah, it could happen today, right here.
I'm drinking right now. By the end of the show, it's going to be a goddamn train wreck.
Yeah.
Hot shot first. You don't know me, motherfucker.
Show me your papers.
Take your pants
off.
Oh,
no, it's drunken Hitler.
Yeah.
Where's that character? Where's drunken Hitler?
I just want to be an artist.
I just wanted to be an artist. This whole thing, there was no solution.
And then there was a final solution to me becoming the best artist ever. So yes, Bloomington was great, as we talk about drunk Hitler. So I want to thank everybody for that. Also, I just want to mention a really good friend of mine, Scott Kennedy, passed away. He was a comic that had been to Iraq and Afghanistan over 50 times.
He's a great guy.
And he took me on. I went to Iraq with him three times. And you know, for those of you who don't know who he was and what he was all about, he was all about doing shows at the small bases. He was like, we'll do shows at the big bases because anyone that's deployed, you know, deserves a show. But he was all about, we would do 3-4 shows a day, like at the height of America's involvement in Iraq when we had like 150,000 people over there. And we would go to these little bases with 100, sometimes less. And like the chopper pilots would be like, we don't know where, like they would be trying to find it on a like really small outpost. And
like you would go, oh, you have to build it first before you.
Yeah, exactly. Or we just did shows standing. Like I mean, we did a show one time in front of 12 Marines in a little room about the size of this garage, and we did a 15-minute show. And the whole story behind that, we had just done a show in front of it was a base in the Anbar province near the Jordan border, and.
Why was it only 15 minutes? Did you guys get booed off?
Yeah, they were like, boo, enough with the palm strikes. Shut up. So we had just done an hour show, and it was our first show of the day, and we were doing like 3 or 4 shows that day, mm-hmm. and we had to get going. And this big, huge Marine, you know, Marines are pretty intense people, was all pissed off. He had to he was cleaning up the room that we had just performed in. And he was like, man, we didn't get to go to the show. We had to do guard duty. Man, this is bull. He's all mad. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry you didn't get to go to the show. Yeah, now we got to drive you guys to the flight line. I was like, oh, shit. And I pulled Scott aside and I go, hey, man, we got to do a show for these guys. Because the last thing I need in my life is a Marine that's angry at me, you know. And he talked to the commanding officer and he's like, and we're like, let's do a show. And the guy goes, you got 15 minutes. Great. It was me, him, and Howie Nave. We each did 5 minutes. No microphone, standing in a little room. We did a bunch of shows without microphones mm-hmm. sometime. And that's what Scott was all about. He could have, when he set up this contract with the military, they offered to pay him a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And he went, I don't want it. I want just enough, like a reasonable, what it takes to be a road comic. And they could have given him, you know, probably 20.
He could have blackwatered it.
Oh, he totally could have done that. He was
it's a no-bid contract.
Yeah, he could have said, Halliburton is shit up, bitches.
All I know is that Blackwater, they just don't sound like that, what the Doobie Brothers song set them up to be. Like, I thought they were going to be something else. Like, it's going to be Mississippi Moon, Keep on Shining. But
yes, they're a different concept. They really should have taken the Doobie Brothers concept. Anyway, but I just wanted to relate that story because Scott was a really good guy, and he just passed
away.
So he
just wanted a budget to cover expenses?
Yeah,
and,
yeah, he could have gotten $20,000 a month, and he went every month. I've done those about once a year, and they are awesome, but they are physically and emotionally draining.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what it's like when I come back. He was doing that every month, man. Mm-hmm. So I just want people to know who he was. He was a good dude. And there's if you go to his Facebook page, a lot of comics have posted photos of tours they did with him. Mm-hmm. Like he's given dozens of comics, let them go on these trips, which has been awesome. So he's in addition to making thousands of soldiers laugh. So I just wanted to say that. And he's the guy that told me, a commanding officer said to him, you know, whenever a comedy show comes through the base, the suicide rate goes down.
Wow, really?
That's what Scott was all about. He's like, Graham, we're saving lives. And I was like, wow, I did not think of it that way. But that's what he was about. So I just want people to know who he was because he was a good dude. So let's move forward.
Let's talk about some movies.
Let's talk about some movie podcasts. Maybe we should talk about some movies.
We'll get there eventually. Mm-hmm. But a lot of important business beforehand.
A lot of important business. Mm-hmm.
But before we start, let me ask, is there like any kind of like, is the family setting up any like charity or benefits for
Scott? They're making, if you go to his Scott Kennedy, his Facebook page, the family is updating. I haven't been there. I haven't checked there in a couple of days, but they're going to make announcements about funeral services and all this stuff. They'll probably have a service in Texas where he was from and where he lived, and they're going to try to set up something here in L.A. And
okay.
So there might be something at the Improv. I don't know yet.
And something with some kind of charitable contributions or something.
I'm sure there'll be something to that effect.
Great.
So check that. All right. The first movie, none of us saw this, The Call.
No, and it's not surprising none
of us saw
it.
We didn't need to see it.
No.
We knew what it was. Mm-hmm. we knew what it was. We saw Halle Berry.
Abigail Breslin all growed up. She's no longer a Little Miss Sunshine.
No.
She's a Little Miss in the Trunk.
You know what? I think this is a good movie.
In the Trunk.
Why don't we do... I'm going to open this up to the fans. Let's do a Kitten Hand fan review on The Call.
Oh, okay.
If anybody actually saw this movie, send in to info@comedyfilmnerds.com. And we will post the a review.
First, explain why you saw this movie. You need to defend your
decision. You need to defend actually you made a conscious decision to go to a movie theater to watch a WWE logo come up and then watch a movie.
Oh, yeah, explain that.
Yeah, explain the WWE thing, because I saw that logo in Dead Man Down.
Yeah, whenever there's a wrestler in a movie, WWE has a piece of it, and they get a producer credit. That's the only way you could get a wrestler in a movie. And
that's why The Rock has been trying to go by his actual name, because the WWE owns
The Rock.
Owns The Rock, exactly. So so you have, like, yeah, you have Dead Man Down. You also have The Call, and... this is my favorite one, though. Upcoming, the next crossover between WWE, you'd never guess who's going to be.
Who's it going to be?
Scooby-Doo.
Roy!
Yes.
We were both waiting for that joke.
We were like, oh, set us up, please, set us up.
Scooby-Doo has to solve a mystery at WrestleMania.
Oh!
So, and I know it sounds like I'm making that, but that's actually true. Warner Brothers just announced it,
the murder was Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
He's going to take off his mask. Old man Jenkins.
In the first draft, that got circulated to all the wrestlers, probably. You know? what I think was going on is now it'll be animated. It won't be live action. And then all the wrestlers will be drawn in and use their voices.
Well, I'm going to see this.
Yeah. That'll be...
That movie I want to see.
Whole episode dedicated to that movie.
Yeah, so, we're going to do a spoiler alert episode to WWE Scooby-Doo movie.
So let's get into the incredible Burt Wonderstone. Now, Neil has a review online, a written review you can read, but I want to hear your guys' takes on it, too.
Well, Baron, you saw it, and you have an interesting take because you grew up in Vegas. So what was your take on the film?
Yeah, I grew up in Vegas, so I grew up seeing these magicians on television all the time. They were, you know, local celebrities and personalities, which is why it was nice to see somebody like David Copperfield make a little cameo, like, oh, David, man. That's my... but it's a take on that life and what it means to be a magician, et cetera, et cetera.
So in Las Vegas?
Yeah, in Las Vegas. Because it's like, when you're a magician, that's basically the biggest you could get.
Vegas.
It's just like you get a theater in Vegas.
Name you are, you.
You're a local, you're a celebrity there. You go on those talk shows, like they have the whole montage at the beginning where they're on Johnny Carson and all these different shows and stuff like that. I thought it was a really interesting movie. Let's see. It's directed by Don Scardino. That's very important.
Donnie Scars.
Is this his feature debut? I was looking him up because I recognize that name. I believe he was one of the producing directors of 30 Rock. So this is like one of his first or like his biggest mainstream feature.
Yeah, he's only done TV. I mean, he's directed 30 Rock, Two Broke Girls, Royal Pains. I mean, this is his first feature film.
So this is his first feature for Donnie Skarsgård.
Yeah, West Wing. I mean, he's done Cosby. This guy has been a TV director for the last, looks like, 15, 20 years.
Jeez. Cosby?
Yeah.
And did nobody give him a feature until now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's a tough business.
It is.
His first feature at 68 years old.
Yeah. Whew. I know. So, what did I think of the movie? I mean, I thought it was pretty good, and I mean pretty good is what I mean.
Right.
So that's not code for something.
Well, I mean, it's not great.
Right.
It was pretty good. It was entertaining, right? Now, I had the unique experience of having auditioned for this movie. I auditioned for the role, I believe Jay Moore did, which was one of the other, he was like supposed to be the comedy comedian. They're hanging out at that magician's bar.
Right, sort of like mid-level magician in Vegas.
Right, exactly. And
he's just kind of going gig to gig. He doesn't have the big theater named after him or whatever.
Right, exactly. Now, when I had read it, I knew Jim Carrey and Steve Carell were attached. So I assumed that Jim Carrey was going to be Burt Wonderstone and that Steve Carell was going to be Anton, his assistant, Anton Marvelton, who ended up being played by Steve Buscemi.
Right.
So Steve Carell headlined this movie, and Jim Carrey ended up being the...
Supporting?
Yeah, he ended up being...
It shows you where Steve Carell's at with his career. Like, he's got deals with everybody, and he's got his own production company.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, it's funny, too, because if you think about Bruce Almighty, like, it was like that was a Jim Carrey movie that, in some way, Steve Carell stole.
Right.
In a scene kind of shined in that movie. And you're like, who's this guy? Right?
Right.
So, and I think it was the opposite in this. I think that for Steve Carell, I don't think it's his most amazing work, but Jim Carrey was, I kind of stole the movie for me, I think. And his character was the kind of Chris Angel, David Blaine street magician.
Right. That does this kind of graphic, gross.
Right. Thing. Brain rapist.
Yeah. That's what
that's the name of his show.
Brain rapist.
Which was hilarious. So, I enjoyed it. Now, it was interesting also seeing like what they changed like from the movie to from the script to the movie.
Like what was changed?
Well, the biggest thing, there was two things that I noticed. The biggest thing being the ending of the movie. One thing was Anton, Steve Buscemi's character, goes to do charity in Cambodia, giving out magic kits.
Yeah.
So in the original script, Bert goes to Cambodia to get him back.
Oh.
But you don't.
Is this a spoiler alert?
Oh, spoiler.
It's too much into the ending, but it's a part of this. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I won't say what the ending is in specific, as much as that there was. I shouldn't say what the ending is in specific.
No.
I'll just say that they changed something that was jokey. If they would have kept the original joke, then the main character would not have earned what he needs to earn for the movie to be over.
Oh, I see.
He wouldn't have, quote unquote, learned his lesson.
So you think it was a good change?
I think it was a good. I understand why they changed it. That it made it. It was a distraction that didn't make the movie complete. So they're just like, you know what? We're already there. Why don't we just do it that thing? Mm. We can cut all that. That's 10 minutes of money we don't have to spend.
Right, right.
Boom. There you go.
Well, I think, you know, I had kind of a similar reaction to it. I enjoyed it. I had fun.
Yeah. There's some good jokes in it.
You know, there's some good jokes in it. You know, I think too, not to dwell on the, you know, my friend Scott passing away, but I was bummed when I went and saw that I just found out the night before. And I think had that not happened, I might have gone into this movie a little more critical and been, because it's, you know, as comics, it's hard to watch a comedy without being super critical.
Right.
This
right.
joke and that joke and how they executed the jokes and all that. But I went in there and just was like, I just want to just be entertained. And I was. I mean, there's some parts to it. Is it the funniest comedy ever? Is it just like, oh my God, it's amazing? It's good though. And every, you know, I like all these guys. I like Buscemi and Steve Carell and
Alan Arkin.
Alan Arkin.
Alan Arkin's always fun and always great.
And Olivia Wilde playing that character, I thought she did a good job with that. You know, I mean, she's just sort of. I mean, that's the problem with these guy comedies is the girl character is just sort of.
The girl character. The
generic girl character.
Generic yeah. girl character. And I think she did the best she could with that, you know?
Right,
I mean, they didn't
right.
give her that much. But I also just liked it as someone who has performed in Vegas a lot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They really did capture that Vegas vibe.
That insanity.
The insanity and those big name Vegas acts.
Right, right.
You know, and how they do the same thing every night and the way they perform. And it's so big and showy. Like, Vegas is mm-hmm. so showy.
It's so showy. And I also like James Gandolfini's take on, like, that Vegas megalomaniac.
Yeah.
Just owns casinos.
Yeah, he doesn't remember anything and other than just how many billions of dollars he's made.
Exactly.
He's like, nope, this is it. Fuck you or whatever.
Doesn't know his own son's birthday. Doesn't know how old his son is.
Doesn't care. Only cares about the bottom line.
Money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think it's worth seeing. And I mean, it didn't do well. It did $10 million.
No, like, it tanked.
Oz in its second weekend did $41 million.
Yeah. Killed everything.
So, well, let's go into
even
that.
The call.
Because oh, God.
The call did 17. It beat Burt Wonderstone.
So Oz beat The Call. Oz still number one?
Oz still number one, yeah.
It's done $144 million overall. It did
$41
million in its second weekend.
Wow. Yes,
which is bigger than The Call and Burt Wonderstone.
And Burt put together.
Yeah. So Oz the Great and Powerful. Now, we actually all saw this movie.
Yes.
So, I can go first if you guys want.
Go.
I wanted to see this with my daughter, but she opted for a play date instead, sadly. 8 years old, already getting turned over for the play date.
Wow.
So, because she's going to go see it with her friend next weekend. But so, Oz the Great and Powerful. I watched this movie. I'm a big Sam Raimi fan, too.
As am I.
A huge Sam Raimi fan. And I actually really like Alice in Wonderland and like those kind of old school kind of literature, like you know, Wizard of Oz, Alice in Wonderland, those kind of
right.
I'm not talking about the movies as much, but the actual old literature I really enjoy. And I watched this movie, and I have to say, I really liked it. I really liked this movie, and I saw like Sam Raimi putting in his like Evil Dead moments in it. There's definitely some Evil Dead moments in there, and I thought the movie had that like nostalgic charm of like the old timey fairy tales and books that were written a very long time ago, with also kind of like some modern techniques of like Sam Raimi trying to scare you and, you know, witch techniques and stuff like that. It was not perfect, but I loved a lot of the things that it did. Like, I loved the character of Oz, what they kind of tried to give him some nuances.
Yeah.
I love the black and white at the beginning, like starting like the old movie. And then not only that, just the aspect ratio. Like it looked like 16 millimeter film. And then when he gets to Oz, it literally, it opens up as slowly and it gets to like the right aspect ratio, this color and panoramic. I thought the world was well realized. I thought the characters were good. And I really just kind of liked the way it kind of came together with that mix of nostalgia and also something new. And I thought Sam Raimi had a really good sense of that balance on how to actually do both. Because these movies have mostly been disasters. When you look at the Alice in Wonderland movie, mm-hmm. These type of remakes or prequels, they've been horrible and unwatchable.
Right.
So it was nice to see one that actually hits the mark. Now, there are some problems with it. It's not a perfect movie. By no means perfect, but I really thought it got mostly on the side of well done. And here are some of the problems, and I'll see if you guys agree when it's your turn. I thought the women cast was fantastic. I thought Rachel Weisz, I thought the witches, I thought they all did a great job. The worst casting, the person that was the most miscast, unfortunately, was James Franco as Oz. And the reason I'm looking at it and I'm like, he's doing his best, but he just can't pull off that smarmy kind of charlatan that you need that charm. You need that charm. You need to be charming. And
charlatans are charming.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them a charlatan.
They're gregarious. Yeah. They're so
and
charming.
He just could not pull it off. And here's what I heard, too. He was not the first choice. The first choice was Robert Downey Jr.
Then I heard Johnny Depp was also the choice, too.
And
you hear those two guys and you go,
Yeah, and then you realize, oh, they could have pulled it off. They're not available. You don't go immediately to James Franco. There's other people, like John Hamm could have pulled it off.
Yeah.
He really could have pulled it off.
But all these choices are a lot older as well. So we're talking about.
But that's okay.
Right. It is okay. Yeah. It is okay. It's just that, like,
because you look at the Oz, when Dorothy finally gets there, he was a pretty old man.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking that, like, I think that some age would have helped the character because he would have been a little bit more around. The mechanism of being a charlatan would have been a well-oiled machine in his life.
Right.
I felt like James Franco's a little too young to pull off like this.
Like a seasoned charlatan.
Exactly, and to have that kind of what's the word I'm looking for? The sadness I think he's supposed to have before he gets to Oz.
So that part was missing, and I guarantee that was all in the script. That was all what Sam Raimi was intending. It didn't come through in the casting. The other thing that really hurt it a little bit is you look at how well thought out this world and kind of the character progression and the story progression was. Like, in a certain way, like, all right, you've got a guy who's basically a charlatan. How is he going to save this world? And I thought that was handled wonderfully. There's only one way to kind of go. The thing that sunk certain scenes is, like, these arbitrary, weird magic decisions. It's like, all right, we'll just eat this apple. And then, no, everything else is well thought out. Don't ruin it.
I know. These
weird, dumb, arbitrary scenes.
They established so many rules and then bailed on them and did all that kind of crap.
So that was the kind of stuff that, like, really, no, you're almost there. You don't have to ruin it in these certain places. But overall, I really liked it, but it does have some problems. But I was just really happy to see. I thought Sam Raimi, you could tell he was enjoying himself when he was making this movie.
Right.
He put those Sam Raimi moments in there. And I really think, like, as far as, like, prequels and with what's been going on with these, like, with Alice in Wonderland and these other movies, it's nice to see one. Okay, you got a filmmaker that cares about the material that actually mostly got it right.
I just got bored so much with this film and so many times. I mean, like, there was moments that I enjoyed, and again, like, all the women that were cast, I thought they were all cast correctly.
Right.
And again, I had the same thing with James Franco, and I think he's a very skilled actor. He just
miscast.
He's miscast. He doesn't. I mean, the he's never all the parts that he's been good in, or when he's like a quieter, subtle guy, or whatever. Like. He's just not a big showman. He doesn't have that, the way, I mean, even you watch him in interviews and stuff like that. Not that he's a bad, it's not like he's like watching Robert De Niro do an interview, which is just like painful.
Yeah.
It's not like that, but he's okay, but he's not like, you watch George Clooney do an interview and it's like, this guy, in addition to being a good actor, is a showman.
They light up the camera.
He light, and that's what you needed. You needed somebody that would do that, what I heard, Robert Downey Jr. would have done that for sure. That's yeah. what he does.
Clooney could have done it.
Yeah.
And you have that seasoned kind of like, I've been a charlatan for a while. I'm charming. I've got this down.
Yeah, that was the kind of what I meant to say is that I feel like James Franco was too young to pull off the season and all that stuff.
I agree, too. And I think that comes with age. And I'm thinking like, you know, if you have like even when Robert Downey Jr. was younger, could have you know, 20 years ago, could he have pulled this role off? And maybe,
he could have because that Robert Downey Jr. has always been that guy.
Right.
He's always been able to do the charming guy that you love, but then
that's a little tortured.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And you know, is he going to fuck me over?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, is this torture and pain going to come back?
He's charming. You feel sorry for him, but you're drawn to him.
And
that
you don't
kind
trust
of
him.
And you don't trust him.
But you can't help but like open your door when he comes about.
Right. And you just want to hug him.
And that's the perfect actor to play that would have played this role.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. To Munders. I felt that, I guess I went in there expecting more Raimi and less Disney. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it was like,
I didn't like the green screen shit that much either.
Well, here's the other thing is that I saw it in 2D.
So did I.
You saw it in 2D? Yeah. Did you see it in 2D?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I felt like, that the animation was a little distracting. I mean, parts where I felt like the world was really animated and that there were scenes that were a little drawn out like that because you could tell they had done that for the 3D.
Absolutely,
so it was just kind of like, maybe I should have seen this in 3D.
Waterfalls and rocks.
Exactly. Like, I would have been less bothered by it, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I guess that, like, I feel because of the Disney aspect that some of those shortcuts were put in there, like the apple and stuff like that, where it's just kind of like they just took some quick things, and I think that those decisions, in my opinion, kind of were condescending.
Yeah,
to the audience, like I didn't trust that this younger, quote unquote, younger audience.
And I think they were unnecessary.
Yeah, I also feel like they didn't need two bad guys. You know, I like Rachel Weisz. You know, I'd like to see her papers. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't get it.
I just felt like there were the two weird sisters, the witch sisters. I didn't think we needed both of them.
Well, I think that was another force for, like, in the original stories, there's, like, four witches in Oz. There's the two bad ones, then there's the two good ones.
Right, right. So yeah. North, that, south, east, west.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But that was another thing where I was like, well, is that necessary? We're doing a prequel. We don't have to really force everything in there.
Yeah.
Well, I want to go into this now because... you were talking about you wanted it to be more Raimi, and you were saying to us before the show that you're a big Sam Raimi fan.
Yes, I am.
Let's have a little Raimi discussion. Let's have a Raimi off.
When it rains, it pours.
Oh, nice. No, you did not, sir. So what are some of your favorite Raimi films?
Are you going to sing in the rain?
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Oh. Is this what we're going to do? Yeah, all right, let me take my shoes off.
Rain Man?
Kind of like Rain a black... Man keeps falling on my head.
Uh-oh.
It's almost like there's a black rain.
That
falling.
Doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turned an evil red. Yeah, I know. We did it. We did all of it. Speaking of which, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, classics, and the original Evil Dead. Of course, I saw the original Evil Dead after I had seen Evil Dead 2. I actually also got the opportunity to audition for that new Evil Dead that's coming out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I read that script, and the entire time I was just like, this isn't funny. That's all I was saying out loud. Like, this is not funny.
Oh, it's supposed to be terrifying. Like, it's supposed to be terrifying. Red Band trailer is actually
It's scary, I get it, but I was like, the original Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, is both of those things.
It's hilarious.
It's funny and... it's terrifying at the same time. He does that. He can be on that
the
line.
The first one was definitely more terrifying than funny. Then it mixed a little bit more in the second one.
No, I agree, but it's like they got to take it to that place. So
sure.
Those two movies, I do love The
Army
Gift.
Of Darkness is so classic.
Yeah, Army of Darkness is fantastic. Mm-hmm. The Gift.
Great
I love,
movie.
Mm-hmm. And I was saying, I just seen The Quick and the Dead's been on cable a lot lately.
Who would have thought that Sam Raimi would have done like a great Western? And it was. It's a great Western.
And Gene Hackman is just so good in it.
His shadow is like a set piece when he first walks in.
That's true. It is.
It's like this giant shadow that just keeps coming.
That's very true.
It's great.
Yeah. And you know,
A lot of people in that movie too. Sharon Stone, Russell Crowe.
Leonardo DiCaprio. But I see Raimi's influence on... I think the two directors that have taken what Raimi has started and ran with it the most are Ruben Fleischer, the guy that did Zombieland.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What's that new one he has coming out? Or did it come out already? The Gangster Squad?
Oh, yeah.
Gangster Squad.
Because I saw 30 Minutes or Less, and it was not anything like Zombieland stylistically. Right. So I'm interested in that. And Edgar Wright. And you you can see, I mean, if you have seen the original Spaced TV show that those Shaun of the Dead guys did, mm-hmm. it is so Raimi.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. they're so nerdy and there's so many references to Raimi. And Shaun of the Dead.
At one point, they're dressed like Scooby-Doo characters.
Oh, yeah. They're dressed like Scooby-Doo. They have the Evil Dead posters mm-hmm. in their house, in their apartment. So it's like Edgar Wright, I think, more than anybody, has taken what Sam Raimi has started and ran with it. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest influence. Yeah. Nothing?
So, now, what did you think of Simple Plan?
You know, I haven't seen A Simple Plan. Mm-hmm. I have seen it, but it's been a while since I've seen it.
You know, it's one of those movies that when you look at Sam Raimi's, like, his library, mm-hmm. it's almost like it's a grown-up Sam Raimi movie. Mm. It's that kind of like, it's pretty much a straight thriller. It's not a lot of laughs in it. And it's that kind of thing where I think it looks like, you know, Sam Raimi's like, you know what, I'm going to do a straight thriller. And he did. I mean, he pulled it off. It really, it's worth a watch.
Mm.
To me, like,
you know, we haven't even mentioned Xena and Hercules and all the other stuff he's produced and done all that stuff.
I mean, I think too, like, for me, like, I think I would have liked to have seen more Raimi too in Oz, because the Sam Raimi movie I just still, like, relish is the first Spider-Man.
Yes, and, like, the second one too. They're both great.
Yeah, I just that first one, again. At the time when it came out, which was like 2002, so we had a decade or 15 years of horrible comic book movies.
Right.
Just one.
Ending with Batman and Robin.
And no one could get Spider-Man right, TV, anywhere. It's, you know, and because there were efforts to get Spider-Man.
Right.
When that came out, it was like, oh, like finally, like my entire adolescent and early adulthood was just maddening frustration. And that he did that. Was so that he did that correctly. The thing that I kind of, you know, in looking at Sam Raimi's resume here on IMDb.
Resume.
is just like some of the diversity that he's done. Like, I mean, you know, The Gift.
Yeah.
And then even.
Also known as Katie Holmes' Boobs.
Yeah.
Yes.
That movie.
But then for Love of the Game, which I'm a baseball fan, and I know it's like it's a romance, but he really did that well. He captured, like, if you're going to tell a romantic story through baseball, he did it really. I love that movie, and casting Vin Scully to just do the, you know, stretch out the summer one more day, you know, just the way I loved everything about that movie. And that's why
I think he's an incredibly diverse and talented director.
Yeah.
And I think he could do it all, kid.
That's the thing. Yeah.
Have you ever talked about Spider-Man 3 at length?
We have.
Okay.
What do you have to say for yourself, sir?
That's not the movie he wanted to make.
Well, that's clear. He wanted to put the Vulture in it, make it a much smaller movie.
And I know because he said in press he was never interested in Venom.
Right.
Right.
Many a times, right? Then I think he had everybody in his face, suddenly had to put Venom in that thing. Danny Elfman didn't do the music for that. And there was an interview with Danny Elfman. It's like, why? You've worked with Sam Raimi so much. Why didn't you do Spider-Man 3? And he said, that man is not Sam Raimi. That was his response. So it's like, oh, he's going crazy over there. Oh. But then who did the music to Drag Me to Hell? Danny Elfman. Which Drag Me to Hell was kind of like, I got to wash all this out of my mouth.
That was back to form.
It was back to form. I got to remember why I do this bad boy.
Yeah.
And then I'm hearing all these theories about this amazing Spider-Man. The newest one is that it's a cannibalization of where Sam Raimi was going to take the franchise. That they own those scripts. You know, he wrote them, he outlined them. There was already outlined scripts and stuff like that. So some people are saying, oh, they put all those things together, and that's why, because he was already establishing the lizard.
I don't think that's what happened.
What?
I don't think that's what happened at all. Because with Spider-Man, with the new Spider-Man movie,
yeah.
I think that one just completely went off the rails by people who didn't really understand the character.
No, but I'm saying that they still understand. I agree with that. I'm just saying they had what Raimi was already working with.
Oh, that could be true.
They took that as their springboard.
And then they didn't understand the words.
They didn't. They didn't at all.
They don't know how to read.
Because it was the lizard, and it was like Raimi had already been establishing the lizard in the first and all those movies.
Yes.
He was going to go that direction. Mm-hmm. There was going to be maybe some stuff about Peter Parker's father. So they're like, oh, that's what he was doing. Let's do that, but let's do the origin story again and have this movie change styles four times.
Yes. and make Peter Parker an asshole. We should do that too.
Oh man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a nice Raimi discussion.
It was. I mean, there's plenty to enjoy if you're a Sam Raimi fan.
No, there's certain directors that kind of have a certain specific style and they do it sort of every time, and that's okay. But he is like you say, he could direct anything. Mm-hmm. You know, if you let him do the whole film front, he's got to build it from the ground up, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, because when he sometimes, if he just gets tacked into, I don't know, like what happened with Spider-Man 3, like that,
yeah,
that's too big of a, giant franchises can fucking buckle people, I think, which is why.
Which is so odd because it happened in reverse. You could tell in the first, you know, one or two that he kind of had a lot of control and he made those his movies. So you would think after those two huge successes, like, do whatever you want for the third one. And then the third one is when they started putting
in
all these nonsense and controls. Right. And he was like,
and that was kind of the inception of Marvel Studios, too, around that time, right?
Yeah.
And they were like, we got to figure out how to not do this again.
Yeah. We got to take control of our stuff again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they did a great job. And then Iron Man and these other movies came out. And then Disney bought everything.
Let's see what happens next. All right, well, let's move on. Here's what is coming out on DVD. The Hobbit, which Chris, you really liked.
Yes, and Jackie and I also, we enjoyed. We had that great discussion. You know, the one thing about this movie, I will probably get it on Blu-ray, although I'll probably wait for the boxed set when all three come out.
Because
it's, of course you will.
You know. But too long, great movie, but too long. It was like too much of a good thing in The Hobbit. Yeah. I don't need the appendices.
Because it's like, the first six chapters of a 19-chapter book?
Yeah, and then like all the appendices from like Lord of the Rings. Like, I don't care about these weird characters and all this backstory. Show me it's right there in the title. Just show me the Hobbit story. But I still loved it, and I will be purchasing it. Now, Les Mis will also be out on DVD if you missed it in the theaters.
Graham's face said so much.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry that none of you could see that face that he made.
It was an odd face. It was almost like he was contemplating, like, did I miss it in the theaters?
DVD? It's a kind of film where I feel like,
did I see it in the theater and still miss it?
Why, if you didn't see it in the theater, then maybe you just shouldn't see it.
You missed your window.
I mean, you need to see Russell Crowe singing on your television.
Yeah. I've never got to see it. I was curious because it's Tom Hooper, isn't it? The guy that did King's Speech. So I wasn't that interested in it until I found out about that whole live singing thing. I'm like, how'd they pull that off? I mean, obviously they got Oscar nominations. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
And the Oscars is the only standard for what is and isn't good.
Yeah, you know, I mean... Yeah, it's Les Mis is, you know, my thinking at this point.
What you're saying is it's pretty much like an Adam Sandler film. Well, you're going to go see it if you're a fan.
If you're a fan, right. When the crazy musical people like musical theater and the Les Mis fans, when they first saw the trailer, went, I'm in. And that was that. And so now if you're not one of those people, I don't know.
I heard it's not the best adaptation either. There's like some better adaptations. Right. I'll end up seeing it over a course of 2 weeks. On DVD, but but I will say, I do like Les Mis, and the stage play that they redid that came like about a year or two ago to LA was amazing. Zero Dark Thirty.
Check this film out if you haven't seen it, just to see Jessica Chastain's
performance was very good.
It's really good.
Oh, I thought you were going to say breasts.
Yeah,
and I was like, actually, that's Lawless.
No, she's a fine actress.
She's very good. I haven't gotten to see that. I still haven't seen the Hurt Locker.
Oh, dude.
So I want to see that before I see this.
Yes, you should. You should watch The Hurt Locker.
Well, this is the sequel. So, yeah.
It is the sequel. It's a spiritual sequel.
It is
a spiritual Same director.
The spiritual sequel. You should do both those. So, yeah, if you haven't seen The Hurt Locker, watch that as well.
She's going to keep making these gritty, you know, true-to-life war movies.
I'm all for
it. Until people stop mentioning Strange Days.
Okay.
I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
This is 40.
Sure.
Did you see this on a plane?
It's shocking. I have not.
Wow, really? This is such a plane movie.
It is such a plane movie. I think I probably watched part of it on a plane. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Great.
Neither of you saw it?
No. Did you?
I wanted to and didn't get a chance to. Trust me, there's a lot I've been wanting to see.
Right.
And Bachelorette And also, now, this is one movie I did get a chance to see. This is our fans have been emailing and Twittering that we have to see this movie, so I finally saw it. I saw Perks of Being a Wallflower this weekend.
All right.
Now, I was really kind of hoping I would have, like, not liked it so I could make a more interesting show. Like, I was like, oh, all the people meet me, you're wrong. This is a dumb movie. And you know what? It's actually a very good movie. Mm. And again, this is one of those movies that got completely mishandled in the marketing. You know, it kind of looks like it's kind of like a cutesy coming of age kind of high school-y movie that's kind of a dramedy. It's funny and dramatic at parts, and it isn't at all. Hmm. It's a full on drama. There's a couple light moments in it, but it's mostly drama, and it does it very well. It's based on a book, and it's also the same guy who wrote the book actually wrote and directed the movie. So there's no loss in the translation.
Oh,
set in Pittsburgh. Kind of 80s, they're still doing mixtapes, so you know,
cool.
It's definitely a period piece, and it's funny. The funniest part was seeing Emma Watson worried about getting into Penn State. I'm thinking, you just went to Hogwarts. What do you care about going to? What do you care about going to Penn State for?
She got wrapped up in Muggle life.
Yeah, yeah.
And why would you want to go to a school that cares more about football than prosecuting pedophiles? Yeah.
So it was one of those good movies, and it had like a lot of cool like supporting performances. Like Paul Rudd does an amazing job in it, and he's not even in that many scenes. He plays like the English teacher. So it's a really well crafted drama about high school in the 80s ish. You know, they never really say what year it is, but it's definitely that time period. So it's worth checking out. It got, you know, massacred in the marketing of it, but that's what it is. It's a really cool kind of indie drama.
Well, see, now I want to see it.
Yeah. Now,
to be fair,
good.
Pittsburgh kind of still is in the 80s.
Yeah. So yeah, they just went and shot it. It didn't matter.
Shot it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone
rolled camera.
Everyone still had mixtapes.
Mixtapes, no cell phones. Yeah. You guys know the internet? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Welcome to Steel City.
I have a CB radio. Yeah. And a Franco Harris jersey.
So you're saying, see, Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Yes.
So say mm-hmm. it. All right, I'm in. All right, coming out this week, Olympus Has Fallen. Now, we were having a discussion before this show about...
Anton Fuqua.
Anton Fuqua. This movie looks interesting. It looks like, oh, good. My first thought was, good, Gerard Butler, not in a stupid romantic comedy. He does not belong there.
No, he does not.
Give him a gun and kick
give him
ass.
A sword or
yeah,
a gun.
Yeah, a gun. Beat somebody up. Blow something up. Yeah. Drive a car fast. But Antoine Fuqua, we all went, it's just like, he can fuck movies up.
Yeah.
He can fook them up. He can, this is fooked.
Baron Vaughn, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, he fooked some movies up. I mean.
Yeah.
It's already classic. I mean, look at the trailer. It's like, uh-oh, Morgan Freeman narration.
He's like the fancy foreign Rennie Harlan.
Oh, that's funny.
So I mean, you're like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. You look at his movies, like, okay, Training Day, right? And my problem with Training Day is, and I've spoken about it on the show, the first 40 minutes were great, but then it just became Denzel Washington. And I don't know if this is Fuqua's problem, or it's his creation, but then Denzel Washington's character just became so blatantly evil, there was no... To me, the interesting part of that film was that, like, gray area, like...
Yes.
You know, if he's
a great action director, but... Like what you're saying is halfway through, kind of loses the characters
the
usually.
The characters and story always start to crumple in his films. Yeah. Like that's and some of these movies, again, like...
So clearly he's shooting them, these movies, in order and gets tired halfway through. I mean, that's like, what's going on.
I mean, Brooklyn's Finest, Shooter.
Shooter. What a weird movie that was.
I mean, and they have these interesting moments to them. Like, that's the thing. You go, oh, yeah, and then go, what?
And it's kind of an opera. In a sort of a way, it becomes this crazy opera where everything suddenly is way too big.
Yeah.
It's just like, what? We were watching a movie.
Everyone's singing.
Yeah. Yeah. That too, Russell Crowe singing. You're like, no.
I'm the shooter.
What else has he done?
He's done Tears of the Sun. Again, like on paper, I remember seeing that, you know, Bruce Willis is a special ops guy. And they just have a mission, but then there's like all these refugees that he can save, and he does it, you know. And so it's like, wow, what a great idea. like, you're a special ops guy, this is the mission, but you see all these like women and children that are going to be butchered by some rebel army.
And
what
then
do you do?
Halfway through.
And then halfway through, you got fooked.
Yeah.
but I mean, that's like all of his, and I'm sure that's what Olympus Has Fallen is going to be. There's going to be moments in it where you're going to go, oh, that's awesome.
I mean, this kind of happened on 24 already. That was like a couple episodes where the White House and the president got captured.
Right.
So. The next movie is The Croods. Now, this movie looks horrible. This is the animated movie about the cavemen who go outside their cave and find the world around them. It's a coming-of-age story. I will probably have to end up seeing this because my daughter is like, I want to see that. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah. And this is what made me laugh is because it's really targeted towards her. It's like,
right.
Because it's got a girl who, you know, meets like, you know, has a crush on another caveman boy who wants to listen to, and he gives her shoes.
Right.
You know, so that kind of, like, okay. So this movie is genetically designed to appeal to my 8-year-old daughter. I get it. So I'll have to end up seeing it.
That's what it is, because there's a computer program that just spits out these trailers that pushes all these buttons. Because I was like, I've seen this trailer.
Right.
A dozen times.
Now I'm going to have to sit through, you know, Nicolas Cage getting another paycheck.
Uh-oh. Because it's basically, it's Ice Age with people.
Right. It's exactly what it is.
That's what's going on.
And because, you know, because Ice Age, those movies are so great.
Hey. You know,
they're going to add people. Man. And they keep making them, too. It's like all these Shreks and Ice Ages. It's like, well,
your daughter keeps going to them.
Well, you know, we've seen the trailer 12 times, but 12-year-olds have only seen it twice.
I know.
Yes, exactly.
It's new to them.
They don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's that kind of thing where the studios that aren't Pixar are like, well, we don't have to be as good as Pixar. Just make it colorful.
Well, now Pixar is starting to not be as good as Pixar. Waka,
well, they
Waka.
Realized it too. Oh my gosh, yeah, they're going to do 3 Planes movies. We found out from Carlos Alice Rocky.
Wait, they're doing 3 of those?
3 of them, yeah. I know, silence, stunned silence.
Baron Vaughn almost just walked out.
Like, I saw Brave because I was expecting.
We just all got fuqued.
We just got fooked. Fuqua.
Shut the Fuqua up.
But so I'll end up seeing that, not looking forward to it. Okay, Admission. This is the comedy, the Paul White's comedy.
With Tina Fey and, oh my God, Paul Rudd's in a comedy.
Isn't that
Holy
weird?
Holy shit. How did that happen? Has he ever, oh man, congratulations, Paul. He's been struggling to get in a comedy film. So hard. Good for him.
And here's the thing, like when I see him in all these movies, when you see him in like a movie like Perks of Being a Wallflower, you realize, oh, that's why I love this actor again. You know, because you forget because they're in these, you know, they do these horrible, boring roles. Like, oh, just play the, you know, play the likable guy. Like, but I just played that in the last 4 movies. Right?
Look,
like,
I think that David Wayne brings out something in Paul Rudd that no one else has. Right? Role models?
Mediocrity?
No. Role models was the same time as I Love You, Man.
Right.
It got buried under I Love You, Man. I think Role Models was the better movie.
Right.
I think Paul Rudd was better in it because it wasn't him doing the thing he always does.
Right.
And then Wanderlust, which I saw in the theater. Have you guys seen that movie?
Yes, I saw that movie.
He's great. I think he's great in that. And I think that in both those movies.
It was not a great movie, but Paul Rudd did okay. Yeah.
But I think there's still departures for him instead of him having to do the Paul Rudd thing.
Exactly.
Which everyone wants him to do all the time.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. And he's unfortunately kind of stuck in that rut. Like when you see him in like a Perks of Being a Wallflower, where he's just literally an English teacher who's trying to help a troubled kid. It's like, it's great. I mean, you want to see him do more of those things. Mm-hmm. You know, play that mentor, play a character that's, you know, that's not the romantic comedy likable guy.
Right. Yeah.
So, okay.
All right. That's it. Good night.
Time for another Recall.
All right, well, that's our show, everybody. Thank you so much, Baron Vaughn, for being on the program.
Hey, it's the least I can do.
23 Skidoo, kiddo.
23 Skidoo, I like you. I got a lot of can do, a lot of moxie, a lot of chutzpah, as the French say. I don't know what.
Did off not to see, the gin mill.
Did not see that character come out. I didn't see that coming.
Uh-oh, drunk Hitler's on the way.
Ah, hello, Sonny. Drunk Hitler's got an Irish accent, I guess.
St. Paddy's Day. That was a couple days ago.
Well, where can people find you? Shows, websites, where can they find you?
Oh, yeah, baronvaughn.com. I'm on Twitter. Put Baron Vaughn into the search of Google.
V-A-U-G-H-N.
V-A-U-G-H-N.
Not Baron Vaughn, something else.
Not V-O umlaut.
Not V-O umlaut. I'm on the Twitters and the website. I'm actually going to be at Laughs Comedy Spot in Kirkland, Washington, right outside of Seattle.
That's a good
little Seattle
club.
Adjacent.
Adjacent.
It's adjacent in a basement, so it's adjacent.
Hello.
It's not a basement. Going to be there this weekend. What's this? March something?
March, I think it's 21, 22, 23.
I guess. Something like that.
Outstanding. And your podcast, once again?
Deep Shit.
Where can people get it?
Go to the All Things Comedy Network.
There you go. Part of All Things Comedy.
.com. Yeah.
Outstanding. All right. Well, that's our show. I just got the logo for my CD, Palm Strike Dance Party. I just got that put on magnets, so that's some swag. So if you buy any of my Graham Elwood merchandise on the site, you'll get a magnet. It's going to change your life. So make sure you do
even
that.
Even if you don't have a fridge, you should still get it. Fridge.
That's magnificent.
Wow, you just fuqua'd the whole show.
That's like drunk Hitler at a bar mitzvah. Am I right? Hello. So I will be headlining Zanies in Nashville this Thursday, March 21st. And I will be headlining Helium in Portland on March 28th. And I will be headlining the Improv in Hollywood, California with these two fine gentlemen, Chris Mancini and Baron Vaughn.
Can't wait
to
be a great show.
April 12th. So all these are on comedyfilmnerds.com and GrahamElwood.com.
I will be at the Fantasy Springs Casino in Palm Springs this weekend, Friday and Saturday night. Only three shows.
Oh, shit.
That'll be the 22nd and 23rd, I believe. Whatever that Friday, Saturday.
You guys ever think about looking at a calendar before we go? It's not like we plug dates every week.
22 and 23, I'm pretty sure.
There you go.
So come check that out. Also, we want to thank you guys also for supporting the store. Really appreciate it. A lot of you guys have been actually going in and doing the Kitten Hand Mercenary donation, which is cool. You just kind of you're throwing down like 20, 30 bucks, whatever you guys have been able to afford, and we really appreciate that. And there's other tiers and other rewards if you want to actually go a little higher. You can get a lot of free stuff, but you know, if you just want to, you know, buy an app or, you know, whatever, it all helps. I mean, if you want to donate $5 or buy, you know, one of the premium episodes for $1.99, it all helps, and we really appreciate the support.
And then, like we've always said, there's always the free stuff you can do, liking the fan page, writing positive reviews on iTunes and all
right,
that stuff.
Right, that helps too.
That helps too. All right, guys, thank you so much. Thank you once again to Baron Vaughn for being on the program. My name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini, and as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Fuquad.
Why would you say that at the end?